it's a special day for a lot of people who've been connected with the Blue Jays in any capacity, or Blue Jays fans, or covered the Blue Jays, or whatever. Certainly knew Roy Halladay personally. I wanted to ask you what your personal reflections are on Roy and his career. And, you know, some of the stuff, again, the Sports Illustrated article that came out this week, that indicates that in some ways, perhaps Roy was a little more of a tortured soul than a lot of us thought he was. Just your view of Roy personally.
Yeah. I mean, there's obviously a lot to unpack there. I actually got to know him the best, when we were talking about trading him. It's probably the most I talked to him in all the years that I was with the organization as an AGM. As everyone knows, he didn't talk much. I mean, prior to that, things I would just, you'd remember, he was always the first guy to show up in the clubhouse. He would bring his, you know, remote control airplanes and fly them inside the dome and do his work. I remember when J.P. Ricciardi was, you know, bringing in guys like Gil Mesh or Frank Thomas or Burnett, anybody to recruit, Roy was always the first guy to say, I'll come into Toronto and help you recruit and do what we need to do. I got to tap into his baseball knowledge of the organization and the team. You know, when he was that off season that he asked to be traded, I actually said, you know, it was almost like an exit interview. I just said, if you're going to be gone, I can kind of tap into your insights. I just got the GM job and so on. And, and obviously just the elite performance and everything else that came with who he was. I don't think I appreciated him enough, his ability, when he was there. And I think, you know, it's one of those things, you don't know what you have until it's gone. And I think, kind of tied into it, once we got David Price in 2015, it was like, oh yeah, this is what it was like to have a frontline starter where you felt like you had a chance to win every single time. And you just took it for granted. I remember JP would always say, man, when Roy Halladay's on the mound, we're the best team in the game. And it was true. I mean, you had a chance to win every single night. So I can go on and on. The Sports Illustrated article, I read that. I think the people that knew him, I don't know that, you know, some things were a surprise. I mean, the rehab and things like that, I was not aware of. Some of the other things, you know, candidly, I can't tell you that I was surprised.
Alex, when you're up close with somebody who's a Hall of Famer, and you also are up close with players, particularly pitchers who are at whatever level you want to say good, very good, like, what is the difference? Is the difference at the end, is it pure, like, sort of athletic talent? Is it makeup? Is it character? Like, is it a combination of all of those things? But what is the difference between, let's say, Roy Halladay and someone who is just a step below Roy Halladay?
You know, great question. You know, obviously, the talent with all these guys, they're all great. But, you know, there's a lot of great elite-level talents. I think it's something that I don't, when you're in the moment, or maybe I was just too young in my career, you don't really put it together. And then you start, when you're around certain great players, you do start to see a common thread. One, they're very serious about their jobs. And it doesn't mean they can't be affable and outgoing and so on, but just they take their career very seriously. It's very important to them. And obviously everyone talked about Roy's work ethic and so on, but just all the great players I've been around, they just, you know, beyond that talent, they had that extra drive, focus, work ethic. There's just a different, and there was also respect amongst their peers. You could just see it, you know, whether it's the way other players treated them and reacted to them. Even, you know, Clayton Kershaw is going to be a Hall of Famer, and being around him, you know, same kind of thing. He's much more talkative than Roy was. But there's similarities there. And even, you know, hopefully a guy in Atlanta, Freddie Freeman, will get a chance to get to the Hall of Fame. He's certainly that caliber player for me being around him. But they just take the game very seriously. They take their careers very seriously overall. And it's just a totally different level, especially when you're comparing it to some other guys that are talented. But like you talk about, maybe the work ethic, commitment, it's just not the same.
Didn't surprise you. What were those things?
I talked to Roy after his career was over, you know, back and forth, to talk about, I talked to him about joining the organization, being in certain roles. You know, there were times he would talk to me about wanting to work in the front office and trying to, you know, set up a path to a senior management role. And then other times he might talk about, wanting to be on the field. And then just, you know, I think, you know, again, candidly, various times that I saw him, his didn't look the same all the time and so on. But, it's a weekend to celebrate and so on.
Right.
So, obviously I'm sure the people that were close to him, assuming all that stuff in the article was that accurate. There's certain things that were clearly kept very private in terms of painkillers and things like that. I didn't know anything about that at all, but, I can see how, he was so driven, so focused, being away from the game and just in, now that I read it and in my conversations with him, there were times that it seemed, again, from my view, I can only speak from my discussions with him, that he was still trying to search for, from a professional standpoint, his post-playing career, what exactly it was he wanted to do. And I remember, Pat Hinkin was in the organization. I believe he's still there now. There'd be times Pat would get involved too. And we really wanted to get him to join the organization and be part of it and try to come up with a job description that would work. But it just seemed like he could never really, could never really pin him down to find something that was going to be the right fit for him.
Alex, I'm sure the answer to this is you remember a lot, but in thinking about the trade to the Phillies for Drayback, Michael Taylor, Travis d'Arnaud, how challenging was that trade, and was it close regarding other players being involved? If you could share just sort of, a quick memory or memories of that specific transaction.
Sure. Basically it was trade him to the Phillies or don't trade him at all and get a draft pick at the time. I think it may have been two, the way the Elias rankings were set up back then, but at least one. That was the thought. So anything that we weighed against was have him for a year when we were going to, rebuild and have him walk out the door for a pick or try to get as much talent back as we could with, rightfully so, he earned his no trade clause. It was pretty much, I'm going to the Phillies or I'm not going anywhere at all. I'm 6 months from being able to choose where I want to play. And obviously with the Phillies, they were competitive geographically, spring training facility and so on, close to his home. It made complete sense for him. So as the process started, we casted a much wider net and I would talk to him about what about this club, what about that club. And he was very, he was very upfront about it, but it just basically was, he eventually ended up telling me I'm only going to go to one place. So I got a lot of phone calls from clubs and then you're trying to negotiate. And really I can say that experience and that alone basically, made me decide to implement, I've yet to give out a no trade clause as a GM. That can always change, but so far that experience of negotiating a trade when a guy has full rights of where he's going to go, was very challenging. And, on top of it, I'm pretty certain there's tampering and all that other stuff and all those other things involved. So, from our standpoint, and there weren't really that many other names that were bandied about at the time. Those were kind of the Phillies' top guys. And it was either that or keep him for a year, which would have been fine, and get a draft pick. And that just didn't make sense long-term for the organization.
Now, Alex, we've talked about the way the game has changed, the way pitching has changed. I mean, you've still got Max Scherzers. You've still got Justin Verlanders. But you're an organization. You've got a lot of really good young pitchers. Do you think we'll see another Roy Halladay? Or is he kind of, and again, maybe with Verlander and Scherzer, the last of a dying breed?
I'd love to say that I think we will, but I don't know that we will. I think they are the last of a dying breed. I think, just the innings. I haven't looked at his numbers in a long time, but, I think Roy would get to, 230, 240. He just would. And I remember there was a moment, I think, again, JP was still the GM, but I remember going into Boston and Burnett and Halladay, and I think Halladay was the only one willing to do it at the time, if I remember correctly, go on short rest in a big series. I remember actually playing the Phillies one time. We had an extra inning game. I think Armando Benitez was on the club, but we were light in the bullpen. We didn't have any to pitch, or we had a chance to win the game. And I think Roy came in with his spikes and basically said he'd go down to the bullpen and throw an inning or whatever it was. Obviously, I don't know when his turn to throw was, but he was so committed, and going deep into the game was so important. He saved the bullpen. It allowed you to plan in so many ways. And, you know, I just, the way the game has changed now, people are so focused on swing and miss, third time through the order, his ability to get complete games, induce contact, do all those things. And especially doing it in that division, in that era of how dominant he was. It was incredible to see. And I just, you know, I think, you know, we'll appreciate it more the further removed we are from it. But I just don't think the industry, all of us, appreciated how good he was, you know, the time that he was there. And obviously the shame of it is that, you know, we never got to see him in the playoffs in a Blue Jays uniform. So when you think of all the great Roy Halladay highlights, it's a lot of Philadelphia moments. And that's obviously tough for Blue Jays fans. But, you know, he did get to win a Cy Young there.
Alex, in terms of the today, based on your conversations around the league, how active a trade deadline do you think it will be?
Yeah, there's always going to be a lot of conversation, and things can change. I think there's so much parity, especially in the NL. There's so few clubs that are truly out of it. And, you know, with another, you know, 12 days or so left, things can still change. I mean, you look at how quickly, you know, things can move from the standings. And I think we do lose sight of the fact that there's still another 2 months left. And I think people sometimes think that, well, wherever people are in the standings, the year's over at that point. And obviously things can change. But, you know, my quick take of it is I think there is more demand than supply. Mm-hmm. I would not be surprised to speaking of that parity. I would not be surprised to see it be a quiet deadline in terms of big names. I think there'll be a lot of volume in terms of small moves and things like that because of, you know, the inability now to add players in the month of August. So I think you'll see a bunch of depth moves and so on. And I think you'll see a lot of players, you know, traded, but I don't know that, you know, those big blockbuster deals are ultimately going to be out there, at least as we sit here today, unless, you know, some sellers emerge that currently aren't planning and things change. I mean, again, 2015, Detroit was not planning on selling. And, you know, Johnny Cueto had already been traded. Scott Kazmir had already been traded. Detroit did not decide to sell until those last 3-4 days. And then Yoenis Cespedes and David Price get traded the last 3-4 days leading up to the trade deadline, and the Mets gets the World Series. He carries them to the division. Obviously, Price carried us to winning the AL East. I mean, that was really impactful. And taking those, you know, taking Detroit off the table, if they didn't decide to sell, you know, there weren't that many big names moved.
Alex, we're going to let you scoot. Appreciate you doing this. Thanks so much for your insight and your memories, and continued success, my friend. Thank you.
All right, guys. Glad to do it.